The fight was already loud before anyone understood it was dangerous. Voices cut through the night. Shoes scraped the pavement. A crowd gathered without deciding to gather. People slowed down. Phones came out. No one planned to step in. Kyra Lynch did. She moved toward the argument, not away from it. Witnesses later said she raised her hands. She was not yelling. She was not threatening anyone. She was trying to calm it down. That decision lasted seconds. What followed was fast and final. Police would later describe the scene as chaotic. Statements conflicted. Some people ran. Some stayed silent. The line between helper and target collapsed without warning. Kyra Lynch did not know the people fighting. She had no reason to be there except instinct. In Illinois, in 2023, one attempt to stop violence ended in a homicide. The case forced a hard question into the open. When does stepping in save a life, and when does it put you in the ground? Chapter 1. Setup and stakes. Police were dispatched after multiple calls reported a fight in progress. It was night. The location was residential, with nearby traffic and foot movement. By the time officers arrived, the fight had already ended. Kyra Lynch was down. First responders assessed her at the scene. She was unresponsive. Life-saving measures were attempted. She was transported to a nearby hospital, where she was pronounced dead. The cause would later be confirmed as injuries sustained during the altercation. The initial scene was unstable. Witnesses were scattered. Some had left before police arrived. Others claimed they did not see the critical moment. Officers secured the area and began separating people who remained. Body camera footage captured confusion more than clarity. Investigators established early that Kyra Lynch was not an original participant in the fight. According to witness statements collected that night, she approached an ongoing dispute between at least two other individuals. Her intent, based on those statements, was to intervene and de-escalate. There was no evidence she carried a weapon. There was no indication she knew the people involved. The decision to step in appeared spontaneous. That fact shaped the case from the first hour. Detectives from the local police department's violent crimes unit were notified. They reviewed preliminary reports and radio traffic. The question was not whether a death had occurred. That was clear. The question was who bore criminal responsibility when a bystander enters an active conflict. Investigators returned to the scene in daylight. They mapped distances. They identified camera coverage from nearby buildings and traffic intersections. Not all angles were helpful. Some cameras missed the critical seconds. Others captured movement without sound. Witness interviews continued over the next several days. Accounts differed. One witness said Kyra stood between the individuals fighting. Another said she touched one person's arm. A third claimed the situation escalated immediately after she intervened. What was consistent was the timeline. Kyra approached. There was physical contact. She was struck. She fell. Medical findings later confirmed the injuries were consistent with blunt force trauma sustained during the altercation. No defensive wounds suggested prolonged fighting on her part. That supported the view that she did not engage beyond the initial intervention. Detectives began identifying the individuals who were originally involved in the fight. Some were cooperative, others declined to speak without legal counsel. One person of interest left the area before police arrived and had to be located later. At this stage, investigators were careful with language. No charges were announced. No names were released publicly. The department emphasized that the investigation was active and ongoing. Behind closed doors, the pressure was immediate. Cases involving bystanders carry complications. Jurors tend to project themselves into the situation. Prosecutors have to explain not just what happened, but why the law applies the way it does. Self-defense claims, mutual combat arguments, and chaos defenses all become factors. Detectives needed clarity on intent and action. Who struck Kyra Lynch? With what force? Under what circumstances? Surveillance footage provided partial answers. One clip showed Kyra stepping into frame. Another showed a sudden movement and bodies shifting. The actual strike was partially obscured. The aftermath was visible. Kyra on the ground, others backing away. Investigators relied heavily on witness sequencing. Who was closest? Who moved first? Who made contact? The state's attorney's office was briefed early. They advised patience. Rushed charges in ambiguous cases collapse later. The instruction was clear. build it clean, or do not build it at all. Meanwhile, Kyra Lynch's death began to move beyond police files. Family members spoke with detectives. They described her as someone who did not ignore trouble, someone who believed stepping in could help. Friends echoed that view. She was not reckless, they said. She was reactive. Public conversation followed a familiar pattern. Some praised her courage. Others questioned the decision. Online arguments formed quickly. Should she have stayed back? Should someone else have stepped in? Should no one have stepped in at all? None of those debates mattered to the elements of the crime. What mattered was causation. Did a specific individual's actions directly lead to Kyra Lynch's death? As days passed, detectives narrowed their focus. Statements were cross-checked, timelines tightened, contradictions were flagged. One account changed after footage was shown. Another collapsed under follow-up questioning. A suspect emerged. The individual was identified as one of the original participants in the fight. According to police, evidence suggested this person made physical contact with Kyra Lynch during her attempt to intervene. Whether that contact was intentional, reckless, or defensive became the central legal question. An arrest was considered, but not yet made. The case now sat at a threshold, enough facts to see a path forward, not enough margin for error. Kyra Lynch stepped in for seconds. The investigation would take months. The next decision, whether to charge and how, would determine whether her death was treated as a tragic accident or a prosecutable homicide. And that decision was coming fast. Chapter 2, Escalation and Reversal. As the investigation deepened, pressure shifted from the scene to the people who had been standing on it. Detectives began re-interviewing witnesses, this time with timelines locked tighter and footage ready to confront inconsistencies. Some cooperated fully, others grew defensive. A few stopped answering calls altogether. Investigators focused on seconds, who was facing whom, where Kyra Lynch stood when she stepped in, whether the person who struck her saw her coming or reacted without looking. Those details would decide whether the act fit criminal recklessness or something less chargeable. Surveillance video became the backbone of the case. One camera, mounted across the street, captured the clearest sequence. Kyra entered the frame from the edge, moving toward the argument. Her hands were visible, palms open, no aggressive posture. Moments later, one of the fighters turned. There was a sharp motion. Kyra went down. Audio was absent. Intent had to be inferred from movement alone. Detectives slowed the footage frame by frame. They overlaid witness statements onto the visuals. One statement now aligned, another clearly did not. A third had exaggerated proximity. That mattered. The individual identified as the primary suspect was brought in for questioning. This interview was recorded. The suspect acknowledged being involved in the original fight. That part was not disputed. They admitted tensions were high. Adrenaline was high. When asked about Kyra Lynch, the tone shifted. The suspect claimed they did not realize she was a bystander. They said they felt someone grab or move toward them and reacted instinctively. They denied intending to strike a woman. They denied seeing her clearly before contact. This statement introduced a defense theory: reaction under stress, lack of awareness, no intent to cause serious harm. Investigators did not argue in the room. They let the statement stand. Medical findings were reviewed again. The medical examiner confirmed Kyra Lynch's injuries were consistent with a forceful blow causing her to fall and sustain fatal trauma. The examiner could not determine intent. That was never their role. What they could say was that the injury was not minor. It was not incidental contact. Detectives presented the case to the state's attorney's office with two possible paths. One was a charge reflecting reckless conduct resulting in death. The other required proving a higher level of intent during the strike itself. Prosecutors pushed back. They asked whether a reasonable person engaged in a fight should anticipate that striking someone entering the conflict could cause severe harm. They asked whether the chaos of the moment excused the action or heightened responsibility. They also asked about Kyra's role, not morally, legally. Was she a true bystander, or did stepping in expose her to the risks of the conflict? Illinois law does not automatically punish intervention, but it does consider context. This was the reversal point. Up to now, the case had felt straightforward. A woman intervenes, she is struck, she dies, someone is responsible. Now the case hinged on perception. What the suspect saw, what they believed, what a jury would accept. Charges were delayed. That delay drew public attention. Family members questioned the pace. Community voices grew louder. Some accused the system of excusing violence. Others argued against criminalizing a split-second reaction. Detectives continued working anyway. They located additional footage from a nearby vehicle camera. The angle was worse, but it showed something new. The suspect turning fully toward Kyra before the strike. That detail contradicted earlier claims of not seeing her. Investigators flagged the discrepancy. A follow-up interview was requested. The suspect declined. At that point, the investigation reached its trap. Either prosecutors moved forward with the evidence as it stood, or the case risked stalling under its own complexity. Kyra Lynch had stepped into the fight believing presence could stop harm. The law now had to decide whether that belief cost her protection or whether the person who struck her carried full responsibility regardless of chaos. The decision would not satisfy everyone, but it would define the case. Chapter 3, Resolution and Aftermath. The state's attorney made the decision quietly. Charges were approved based on the evidence that could survive court, not the emotions surrounding the case. The announcement came days later, measured and brief. The suspect was charged in connection with Kyra Lynch's death. The specific charge reflected the prosecution's assessment of intent and risk rather than a claim of premeditation. The filing stated that the suspect's actions during an active fight resulted in fatal injury to a third party who was not engaged in the conflict. Police executed the arrest without incident. There was no public spectacle, no statement from the suspect. The booking photo circulated within hours. In court, the defense did not dispute that contact occurred. Their argument focused on context, chaos, adrenaline, fear. They framed Kyra's intervention as an unpredictable variable in a volatile moment. According to the defense, the strike was reactive, not targeted. Prosecutors countered with the video evidence. They emphasized visibility. They highlighted Kyra's open hands. They argued that turning toward her before striking showed awareness. Not planning, but recognition. The case did not hinge on heroism or blame. It hinged on reasonableness. A jury heard testimony from investigators, the medical examiner, and witnesses who had remained consistent from the start. Footage was played more than once. Each viewing slowed, each pause measured. The verdict reflected compromise. The suspect was held legally responsible for Kyra Lynch's death, but the conviction did not carry the maximum penalties possible under Illinois law. The outcome acknowledged both the recklessness of the act and the volatile circumstances in which it occurred. For Kyra's family, the result brought a form of closure without relief. No sentence restores what was lost. They spoke publicly about her intentions, not the legal arguments. She saw a fight. She tried to stop it. That was the end of her role. The case rippled outward. Law enforcement agencies cited it in training discussions about crowd fights and bystander risk. Legal analysts debated the boundaries of responsibility when third parties intervene. Community groups used Kyra Lynch's name when talking about situational awareness. There was no clear lesson that fit on a poster. Stepping in can save lives. It can also end one. Kyra Lynch's death did not change the law. It clarified its edges. Intervention does not erase accountability, but it does not guarantee safety either. In violent moments, intention is fragile and consequences arrive faster than judgment. The final record lists her as a homicide victim. The court record lists a conviction. Neither captures the seconds that mattered most. Those seconds belong to the people who were there, and to anyone who ever wonders what they would do when a fight breaks out in front of them.